2 years after the announcement and decades of waiting before that, BYU Athletics finally entered a Power 5 conference in the fall of 2023 into the Big 12. Today we look back at the triumphs and the future of Cougar sports after year one in the league. It's the Big 12 Roundtable, and it starts now.
Good evening, Cougar football fans, and welcome back inside Lavelle Edwards Stadium on the beautiful Brigham Young University campus in Provo, Utah. Tonight, we tip off a new era.
Oh, wow! Down the top with the hammer! And into the net, BYU has jumped back in front.
Two ahead to Wilson, 30-foot three at the buzzer, good!
And the Cougars advance.
Find space to the right. Martin's got a first down and more! A 10-5!
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Today we will be looking back on BYU's first year as an official member of the Big 12 Conference. I'm Jerem Jordan. Great to have you with us. On today's show, we'll look back on the last year in BYU athletics. It's first in the Big 12. We're stoked. Jonathan Tavernari will help us break down men's hoops. Women's soccer coach Jennifer Rockwood will discuss the incredible comeback against UNC and another college cup. And Diljit Taylor and Ed Eystone recap another incredible running year for cross country and track and field. But we begin with football. Certainly not the start we wanted in the Big 12, right? But year two, hopefully, will be better. Joining me to help break it all down, 5-7, 2-7 in the Big 12. Five-game losing streak was tough. Some good wins in there at the beginning. But to help us break it down are some all-time legends, some Mountain West All-Conference guys, NFL guys, linebacker, receiver, David Nixon, Austin Colley. Great to have you in studio, guys.
Hey, always fun to be talking football in June. I mean, we're getting closer. And you can feel it in the air. Starting to get warmer outside. Let's go.
Austin, thanks for getting the memo on the shirt, man.
You know, yeah, I just said, what's Jerem rocking?
We're going. We got a button down with the chain. Yeah. You look nice, too.
I like it.
I did say, don't tell Dave, though.
Yeah.
Well, clearly. Yeah. Clearly. That's awesome. Okay, so last year, there was a strong start to the season. 5-2. At that point, I felt like, I think we all did, hey, bowl game's happening. Can we get to 8? Last five were tough. Offense sputtered a little bit. Defense held its ground and then kind of sputtered as well. It was a growing year where now we know what it takes in the Big 12. I
think. Yeah, listen, this team got exposed a little bit. And I think we all thought that the first year in the Big 12 might be pretty difficult just because you're trying to get used to the grind of a conference schedule like that. You know, if you recall, BYU would start off strong in Independence and then they'd have New Mexico State at the end, right? Whereas in this one, the Big 12 schedule is a whole different beast. And we saw fatigue set in. We saw injuries set in. And ultimately, this team just couldn't find a way to win games. They were in games. You look at the Oklahoma game, you look at Oklahoma State, they were in those games, and it came down to just finding ways to win and compete and finish, right? Finish is the main key word. If I'm those guys this year in the locker room, the offseason motto for this year is finish. Finish every game, finish every drill. I remember going back to our years, Bronco instituted something called Super Games, and that was because we struggled finishing in prior years, and he wanted us to compete. And compete till the end. And I think that's something this team has to figure out this year is compete to the end and finish these games and hopefully find themselves winning more games than what we saw last year, obviously.
What was the Super Game? What were those?
You know, just an array of different games, competitions, right? I think, you know, my squad along with Max and Dennis, I think, won it every year.
False.
No big deal. You know, just the offense putting it on the defense as, you know, per use. But no, it was good. I think the one thing that stuck out to me, and I'm sure stuck out to the players talking to them, is just the level of competition across the board when you get into the Big 12, right? When you get into a Power 5 conference, you're competing against a guy who's a dude, right? Always has been, you know, typically a 4 or 5-star recruit. Has been taught the fundamentals from some of the best coaches in the country. So, you know, you go into Independence, you're not going to find that, right? There's going to be a big drop-off depending on the position group. Here across the board in the Big 12, there's going to be a dude in every spot. And that takes some getting used to. Game planning-wise, that takes some getting used to. You got to really be picky and really kind of isolate where your best matchups are going to be. And even in those best matchups, you got to know it's going to be a dogfight.
Let's talk about the offense specifically, and then we'll get to the defense. So SP Plus ranked 75th, points per game 99th. These are not where you want to be offensively for BYU. The run game really struggled, points per play not great. Keaton Slovis is a guy, gets hurt. Jake Retzlaff is preserved for a red shirt, plays the last four games. It's tough competition. He played four of the top five teams in the Big 12. Offense sputtered. Where do we begin to assess what needs to be better for this year, Austin?
Yeah, I'd say the run game, of course, and I'm sure Dave is going to say the exact same thing, but I'll probably piggyback on the fact that, you know, on the O-line comment, they struggled, right, at times. And I think it was apparent even just to your average viewer and fan that the O-line communication-wise, assignment-wise, was not sharp, was not crisp. And when the guys up front, man, the guys in the trenches aren't doing what they're supposed to, or there's missed assignments, missed blocks, they're not able to get their hands on anybody, that affects the entire offense, right, from the run game to the passing game, giving, you know, the quarterback enough protection. I think that was a big issue, right? Like, you want to make your quarterback, I think college football offenses live and breathe and die with the quarterback, right? And if you got a quarterback that's back there that feels comfortable enough to go through his progressions, make the right reads, and just play pitch and catch, that makes all the world of a difference. And then obviously opening up the run game, right? If you have a great ground game, obviously it's going to force everybody in the box to play a little bit more downhill. Now things are going to open. Holes are going to get bigger for the wide receivers to kind of exploit.
Okay, let's talk about that quarterback position, David. Gary Bohannon comes in, was at Baylor previously, South Florida BYU, played him twice. They've seen him. That's the thing with BYU football. If you played against BYU, you might play for BYU in the future. We've seen that a little bit. Jake Retzlaff had 4 games of experience. Do you expect Retzlaff to be the starter in game 1 against Southern Illinois or Bohannon?
I do. With that being said, I think Bohannon brings obviously some senior leadership. He's been around the block. He's had to learn a lot of offenses. He's seen a lot of defenses as well. I think he'd be a fantastic mentor for Jake. But ultimately, I think it's Jake's job. And I think he showed last year he's got the ability. He's just got to make better decisions. And we've seen that with some of our own quarterbacks. You look at John Beck and even Max Hall in their earlier years. They tend to force the ball a little bit and make decisions that maybe weren't the best. But as they grew, they learned from their mistakes, and they improved and got better along the way. So I think Jake, I saw him throw the ball just a couple weeks ago to his receivers. He's zipping it around, and I think he's got the ability. Once again, now it's just mental and be able to kind of stay with the game and understand, okay, that's a good pass, but let me find a better pass, right? And maybe to try not to squeeze into that window because it might get picked, and that really hurts the team if so. But what I also think Jake brings to the table is his legs. And Austin touched on this run game. You can't sugarcoat. The run game was terrible last year. One of the worst in the NCAA, 104 yards a game. And I think that's put on the O-line. But also I think that's put on the running back and quarterback. I think, you know, if you can bring an element of a dual threat quarterback like Jake brings, and now you've had a whole offseason, and A-Rod's had a whole offseason as well to kind of implement a scheme around him. Man, I think that alleviates a lot of pressure off the O-line and helps with that run game. And you also look at A-Rod's history, right? You look at his last few quarterbacks, Zach Wilson and Jaren Hall. These guys were dual-threat quarterbacks.
And year 2 as a starter was much better, which is expected.
Which is expected, right? I mean, last year, Keaton Slovis, not such a dual-threat quarterback, right?
And then although he runs a 4.5 40 at the combine, yeah. And he had two touchdowns rushing in the first game.
Guys got gas.
Yeah. We didn't know it.
Listen, maybe the pads slowed him down or something, because it looked like it was like a 4.9 on the field.
It's like Puka, his football speed was better than his 40 speed.
Yeah, so I think the run game will improve, but that's the first area they've got to figure out. And because, like I said, it was one of the worst in college. And that results in a terrible third down percentage as well. They were behind the chains all season. They were, I think, 23 or 28% from third down, which puts you in a bind. It's tough to go win games when you're struggling that often to convert.
The one thing that I'll say about Jake, too, is – Jake is going to make mistakes, okay? He's going to make mistakes. I don't think Jake is – he's not on that level where you can expect a mistake-free game. The difference is that Jake has a certain moxie or a certain quality, intangible quality about him that he's going to will a win, right? He has that ability to, whether it's through his arm – through, you know, broken plays, extending broken plays, which is high, you know, what our offense here at BYU highly relies on, or he's going to get it done with his feet on the ground, right? I think we saw glimpses of that last year when he was able to extend plays that maybe we weren't getting out of Keaton. So those extra 3 to 4 yards that he would get after a broken play or getting forced out of the pocket, I think that is something that he's going to bring to the table, and he's just kind of got this, you know. I know I'm not maybe as on that level as some of these other quarterbacks in the league or college, But I'll tell you what, like, I'm going to put the team on my back. I'm going to make sure I give it everything I got and leave it all out on the table and get a win.
So listen, if we learned anything last decade, if you're the backup quarterback, you better be ready to play.
Be ready.
If you're Kerry Bohannon,
you
be ready, because BYU's had just a carousel of quarterback play the last 10 years with injuries and things like that, and it's not going to get any easier at the Big 12 with Utah and Arizona State. Guys, thumpers, these teams love to hit, and so there's chances for injury, so be ready.
Aaron Roderick made a big deal out of spring that Jake Retzlaff didn't throw a single pick in 11-on-11, which is a big deal. And I asked him, was he being aggressive too? He said, oh, yeah. So he loves that he did not turn it over in spring. He's going to turn it over in the season. But if you can limit those, let's go. Okay, let's talk about the defense last year. 94th in SP+, 96th in points allowed per game, 106 in yards per game. Again, you don't want to see triple digits or in the 90s in these. Room for improvement. Those last five games were tough, right? Giving up nearly 38 a game. David, what do you expect in year two under defensive coordinator Jay Hill?
Yeah, real quick, a stat that didn't show up there is rushing yards, right? You look back at the West Virginia game.
We only have so much space.
I know. I mean, that's a part that's hard for me to watch. And talking to the team, that's something they've addressed in the offseason as well, is stopping the run game, right? I mean, they were one of the worst in the NCAA, averaging giving up 4.86 yards per carry. So they've got to improve that. So I think for BYU, it was going out there and beefing up that defensive line. Some good transfers that came in to help beef that up. But you've got great returners coming as well. I mean, you look at this BYU defense, there's guys coming off injuries. You look at Ben Bywater, that's coming off an injury. Micah Harper. You get talent back with Talon Alfrey and Jacob Robinson. You look at the front. I mean, you've got a lot of, I mean, John Nelson, Tyler Batty decided to come back. There's some huge additions to this defensive line as well as this defense as a whole that BYU will be able to play into. And so I'm excited for this defense. I think they've got the potential. I think you've obviously got the right coach at the helm. And I think
– referring to Jay?
Exactly, Jay Hill being the coordinator. I love the position coaches. I love everything about it. I think last year this defense sometimes if you have an offense that's struggling and puts you in bad situations or three and outs, you don't get a chance to catch your breath, whatever it may be, you become susceptible. And I think with injuries as well as an offense that was sputtering and struggling, this defense kind of got picked apart. And so I think this defense could benefit from a productive offense, but as well as I think another year being in the scheme from Jay Hill will help this defense tremendously. And I'm excited to see what they can bring, because they've got the dudes out there as well. They've got guys that have produced at one point or another. Some got hurt and some had to come back. But you put them all together, assuming they stay healthy, they've got a pretty decent squad out there.
Let's talk about some of the notable changes specifically on the coaching staff for BYU, trying to jumpstart that run game. T.J. Woods coming in to run the offensive line. He came from Georgia Southern. He's had Power 5 experience previously with Gary Anderson, who's an analyst, by the way, big time behind the scenes at Oregon State and Wisconsin. Kevin Gilbride comes in and coaches the tight ends. This guy was with the Giants, Bears, Panthers from 2010 to 2022. BYU hires dudes from the pros. We have Kevin Young in hoops, Kevin Gilbride running the tight ends. What kind of difference will these two make in jumpstarting the offense, specifically in the run game?
Yeah, I think you know, it's not going to be hard to improve the offensive line's performance and what they you know, what they put out there on the field, the product that they put out there on the field from last year. The one thing I will say is you know, Coach Gilbride, I've heard nothing but great things talking to the tight ends, you know, Anthony Olsen and Keanu and Reiner, the new addition. They've got nothing but great things to say about him and say that he's extremely valuable. And the things that they are learning are extremely valuable that they've started incorporating in their tool set. But when you got a guy that's had an NFL pedigree, he's seen how it's done, right, at such a high level, has worked with guys that are not only, you know, great at blocking, but also can run routes, catch the ball, which is what we're going to need out of a lot of these tight ends. You know, it's only going up, right, in terms of those positions. Obviously, yeah, we'll wait to see kind of what the real value is on game day on the field.
Can't wait till August 31st against Southern Illinois. We've mentioned some of the additions. Gary Bohannon to come compete in that quarterback room. Jack Kelly is a four-star linebacker coming from Weber State. Jay Hill's Weber State time still benefiting BYU with some of these guys. Mark Collins as well, expected to be a defensive back starter, perhaps a cornerback. And you mentioned Reiner Swanson. He's a freshman expected to play. Let's wrap with this. Why will year two in the Big 12 be better than year one?
Listen, I'm going with just more familiarity with the conference as a whole. I mean, you've now played all these opponents. You know how to scout them. And then I think some continuity. We talked about all the returners coming back. You know, you look at all the guys that have contributed one point or another back on the squad. I love Jack Kelly. I talked to the coaching staff. I asked him, I said, hey, is this an upgrade or about the same as A.J. Bombachon, who had a great season, won the leaders last year? And they were like, oh, it's an upgrade. He's a dude.
And A.J. was good.
A.J. was good. He said Jack can really move, fluid hips. And so, he led Weber State in sacks, 10.5 sacks last year. And so I expect him, he has a nose for the ball. So I'm excited for him on the defense side of the ball. And then offensively, this offense, it was there. There were glimpses of brilliance last year, but they just couldn't sustain it. And so for this year, it's just learning to not shoot yourself in the foot with turnovers, but continue to be productive. And you've got guys, you talk about Reiner, look at Keanu Hill. Throws on some weight, goes to tight end. I mean, that's a mismatch all day long.
Those
at the
two,
tight position,
they're
right?
Very excited about.
So there's dudes all across the field. The question is, can they put it all together? And can BYU not go out there and like I said, shoot themselves in the foot and be behind the eight ball? Because we noticed that it's tough to come back in the Big 12. You can't make a big surging mount at the end. It's kind of a grind it out type football. And so learning from last year, knowing kind of what the expectations are, having scouted these teams, I'm pretty optimistic going into this year for sure.
The other thing I'll say is if you go back and look at the film from last year, like the last five games, not great, right, on paper. But if you go back and you take a look at the film, and then you also combine that with what you're hearing out of practice, the way that those guys were handling practice, the veteran group, the leadership group, taking accountability, understanding, hey, something has to change here. We can't keep doing the same thing and expecting the same results. Hearing guys like Chase Roberts stepping up as a leader, being an underclassman and saying, hey, you know what? We're all going to stay after practice, and we're all the plays that we screwed up, we're going to sit here and we're going to do it until we get it right on our own time. Like, you hear those types of things, and then you go back and you watch the film, and you see kind of what the momentum was looking like. Even though, like I said, it didn't show on paper and it didn't show on the scoreboard, there are so many good, it looked like a completely different team, right? David mentioned continuity. It looked like a team that was collectively knew what the goal was, had defined what the goal was, knew what the expectation was and what was accountable from each other, and were doing everything that they could to do that or to get to meet that standard or meet that expectation. And you just didn't see that in the first, I'd say, six games, right?
I would say if there's anything positive for BYU ending their season on kind of losing streak, it's the fact that's a sour taste in your mouth that hopefully
provides to that pre-Michigan.
Yeah,
right? 03,
yeah, 03, yeah. 03, I remember that was they went to offseason with an added motivation because it's a terrible feeling. Everyone wants to go bowling at least, right? But to know you were that close, hopefully they've used that as kind of their driving motivation this offseason to come out and come out strong. They have the ability, they know they have, because when they put it together, you're hanging with Oklahoma and should have beat Oklahoma, right? And then Oklahoma State at the end of the year, so when they know they can put together, they can hang with anybody in the Big 12. I think that's the part that you hang your hat on, knowing that if we don't shoot ourselves in the foot and we play our style of football, we have a chance against anybody.
And they will have a chance against many of the good teams in the Big 12, four at home, by the way, of the top five by FPI. That's going to be fun. Guys, thanks for coming in studio. David, next time we'll text you about the wardrobe.
Yeah, I'll put it on next time. Yeah,
no more. Always ready to golf. Yeah. I like that look.
There you go.
Thanks, guys. Before we go to break, let's talk about one of the teams who came into the Big 12 immediately and competed, took third. Women's volleyball, 25-7, 13-5 in Big 12 play, 12th straight NCAA tournament. They have not dropped out of the top 18 in over a decade. They've been incredible. Third in the Big 12, lost in the second round to Arizona State at home. Aaron Livingston, Whitney Bauer, All-Americans. Bauer became the all-time rally scoring era assist leader. Three players on the Big 12 team. Mia Lee on the Big 12 All-Rookie team. Up next, Jonathan Tavernier is in studio to recap an incredible men's basketball season and perhaps the greatest offseason in program history. This is BYU Sports Nation's Big 12 Roundtable.
The BYU Cougars are one of the biggest surprises of the college basketball season. Picked to finish 13th in their first year in the 14-team Big 12, the toughest conference in the country. The Cougars proved all of us wrong.
And the sixth seed is BYU, their first season in the Big 12.
Mark Pope is the new men's basketball coach at Kentucky.
What I want to do to take it to the next level. Let's go Cougs.
Go Cougs indeed. Welcome back to our Big 12 Roundtable. Let's look at men's basketball now from last season and look into the next year. It's been pretty exciting as we welcome you back to this. Jonathan Tavernier is in studio to break it all down. JT, what's up, man?
Okay. Everything good?
Everything's great, man. Everything's great. I did not think that after last season that the offseason could somehow supersede the season. But here we are, man. The mojo around the program is incredible.
I don't remember, and I mean, even looking back, right, learning the history about BYU basketball, I don't remember an off season that had this many, like, kaboom, you know, like, and you think back even to after Jimmer, and that was the NBA lockout. I know him and Jackson had some things about BYU and camp, but the way it was this year, you know, it was boom, Kevin Young, boom, this, boom, that, Yegor, Chris Burgess, the assistant coaches. It just, you know, keeps getting better and better.
And right? It's not done.
And
it's
not done,
which is crazy.
Yeah.
But most of this program is looking back. So let's go back and look back at the tremendous men's basketball season. Expectations were not high at all, yet they go 23-10, 10-8 in the Big 12. That's tied for fifth with Kansas, 6 seed in the NCAA tournament, 16 weeks ranked in the AP poll. JT, they were top 5 in net for a long time. They were number 1 in net. Look at the notable wins. We hope every year it's like this. Kansas, Iowa State, Baylor, San Diego State. NC State goes to the Final Four. What an incredible season. What was your favorite part of last year?
Honestly, from the beginning to the end, I think we have to be realistic with ourselves. Nobody expected that. I don't think the guys in the locker room expected that. And so I feel like because expectations were so low, and this is no disrespect to any of the players, right? But I think because expectations were so low based on the gauntlet that is the Big 12, I think the whole season, I start thinking back, you know, going back and forth with you and Ty doing post-game shows after San Diego State. And we're like, wait, are we really this good? Is it happening? And then as we go on and we blow out teams, you know, I remember being here for Wyoming, and then as conference started and you went on the road at UCF and you get all these different wins and Iowa State and then Baylor, and you're playing, you know, head-to-head with Houston at home, and you're like, wait a minute, like, you know, it's going to happen. And I think obviously culminated with the NCAA tournament, but to me, the best part of last season was the fact that these guys went above and beyond. And because our expectations were so low, I feel like we were on cloud 9. And then, you know, halfway through the season, we're like, wait, we're really this good. And then you could just kind of like just enjoy the ride, you know. So that, to me, that was it.
It's not only about the view from the top. You got to enjoy the hike as you go up.
Yeah.
And that hike was awesome. Certainly the view from the top was fun. It was disappointing to lose to Duquesne in the first round. I think a win in the NCAA tournament would have really helped sort of the narrative at the end of the season. But I think we've understood that that was special last year. What was the best win? Because people start with at Kansas. That's probably where I sit as well.
Yeah.
But you're beating 2, 3, 5, 8, 9 seeds in the NCAA tournament. NC State, who goes to the Final Four.
You know, I would personally go with Kansas, right? Growing up in Brazil, I would dream about like, oh, blue blood, NCAA tournament, like you're in college. And so you have to go with Kansas. I understand that Kansas had a down year.
Not our fault.
But that's not on us. And you beat Kansas with Bill Self and with, you know, a plateau of Burger Boys and McDonald's All-Americans and guys that are making crazy NIL.
Burger Boys. I love that, dude.
You know what I mean? Like, you have all of these different things. You have to – I would personally say it's Kansas.
Yeah.
But then looking at last year and what we were talking about before the segment, as the season, 2023-2024, Iowa State has to be up there. NC State has to be up there. Although, like, we steamrolled the NC State. But it has to
very
be up
early,
there.
Very early, but got them.
Because of where they ended up going,
yep.
And they ended up having a crazy run. And I mean, I certainly wish I could go back to November and put some money on NC State to go to the Final Four.
You wouldn't be here. You'd be on a yacht in Italy, dude.
Right. And so, because who could have guessed, right?
Crazy.
But again, it's those sorts of things. To me, one thing, it gives me hope. Being somebody, I only won one game in the NCAA tournament, right? And that was 2010 with Florida. A lot of the fan base are like, well, we need to win the NCAA tournament. We need to win the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of things that play in there. And, you know, I fully believe that in terms of statistics and results, I played in the most successful era of BYU basketball. And we only had maybe 2 or 3 NCAA tournament wins. 2 with Jimmer. Then we had the Iona game that Brock Zylstra went crazy.
Yep.
And so I feel like you have to be able to get to a point that the players understand the moment, and nobody better to understand the moment than Kevin Young.
Okay, Mark Pope gets the Kentucky job. We did not think we'd be saying those words a year and a half ago, but here we are. So BYU goes out and they get the top paid assistant in the NBA in Kevin Young. A splash hire that has a Woj bomb and has had massive waves throughout the world. What's the best part of this for you that BYU hired Kevin Young?
So to me is the fact that they hired the top assistant coach in the NBA. You know, obviously, because of who we are and what we stand for and whom we represent, the aspect, the religious and family aspect and the gospel aspect for him is huge. But when you, if you can separate church and state for just this comment, and you got the number one assistant coach in the NBA to drop out of the, I don't want to say race, because he turned down a few head coaching jobs, or, you know, so is the word, to then come to little old Provo to come be at the Marriott Center. That right there is mind blowing. And so that to me, and then obviously, you know, with some of the guys that he has signed, my mind is still in shock that, you know, we have signed some of the guys that we have.
A Russian projected lottery pick from Real Madrid in 25, two ESPN top 100s in Brody Kozlowski and Elijah Crawford, Kaba Keita coming down from Utah, Mawit Mag from Rutgers, and they're not done. What excites you the most about this roster for next year?
So, you know, I think that when you mix the experience of Dallin, of Trevin, of Richie, and even Foose.
You also had to get to come back. There was work done there.
You know what I mean? And so I think when you get these guys coming back, and then you put together with, you know, Yegor and Mawat and Brody and all of these new guys, and they're not done yet, and Elijah, what Kevin has accomplished in the last 7 weeks, it's unheard of. And I will say this, growing up outside of the U.S., you know, the prospect of playing in Europe for me was always, you know, I obviously you want to play in the NBA, but just for me was playing the EuroLeague and playing overseas. And to get Yegor, a top prospect in the EuroLeague, I mean, he dominated the EuroLeague juniors last season. And he was cooking everybody. To get that kid who was probably going to get some minutes in the ACB, in the EuroLeague, I'm not saying the trajectory of Luka, but he was kind of like following those footsteps, to drop out of there, to come to the U.S. That to me, it still stays in shock, because it is unheard of. Now, I know there's an IL and there's this and there's the collective, but still, when was the last time you heard of a lottery pick turning down, you know, a place that produces NBA talent, you know, night and day, to come to BYU? It never happened.
Sean Bradley came to BYU and is the best player BYU's ever signed at a high school. He was a member of the church. He's from Utah. It's awesome to get those guys too, but you combine it with something like this?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And to me, that you just got to call it the Kevin Young effect. Does it happen with Kevin Young? Absolutely not.
Nope.
You know, and to me, you know, you have to say thanks to what happened in the past, but you do have to look in the future. And, you know, extremely excited to see what Brother Young accomplish in the next few years.
Wait, I told him with Steve the other day, he's got to get the, you know, family tree, ancestors near me thing. Yeah. We got to find out what it is to Steve. And then they told me to brag him. I think it's five greats, maybe something like that.
Okay.
So there's a relation there, which is awesome. But JT, we appreciate the time, man. We're going to see you soon enough in November, December. We'll be hanging out here, watching games. It'll be awesome, man.
And I'll propose that if we win a national championship with Kevin Young, that Brigham Young statue get replaced with Kevin Young.
So, how dare you? Blasphemy.
Throwing it out there.
JT, bringing in hot takes. We appreciate it, man.
Yep.
Let's talk about some of the other teams that had great efforts and years in the Big 12. Women's basketball recruited well. Young group still trying to figure it out a little bit. 16-17 last year. 6-12 in the Big 12. 10-5 at the Marriott Center. Nearly pulled off some great ones. Did beat Baylor at home, which was awesome. Wake Forest, Texas. Lauren Gustin. What a career from Lauren. She was awesome. And then, of course, Delaney Gibb coming in from Canada. Number 77 recruit in all of Canada in the senior women's team camp. She's going to be a baller. That'll be a ton of fun. Also, softball. 31-23, 11-16 in the Big 12, 10-8 at home. Notable wins against Oklahoma State twice, who was in the top five. And then Oklahoma, who just won their fourth in a row. BYU beat them. Those are some great wins, unfortunately left out of the NCAA regionals where they look to be next season. And baseball, 21-31 overall, 7-23 in the league, 9-14 at home. Beat Texas twice. That was a great series. Gonzaga, Three times USC, Trent Pratt and the boys hope to make the 10-team Big 12 baseball tournament coming up next year. After the break, women's soccer head coach Jennifer Rockwood recaps the incredible run to the College Cup and that amazing comeback against North Carolina as our Big 12 roundtable continues.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Got blazing speed and a lethal left foot. Mozingo, bingo.
And we've gained lots of fans over the years by watching the way we play.
Was there a team who impressed more than women's soccer last season? 23-3 overall, undefeated in the Big 12. Second College Cup appearance, amazing. Number one ranking in BYU history for the first time. Number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Ninth straight tourney appearance, led the NCAA in offense, total goals, shots per game, assists. Incredible season for the BYU women's soccer team. Fun to be a part of it as we welcome you back to this Big 12 roundtable. I don't know if there was a team more prepared to go into the Big 12 and have a great year than women's soccer, and they were awesome. And in the chat about it is the only coach in BYU women's soccer history, Jennifer Rockwood. She's also your favorite Rick's College basketball player, fun fact.
There we go.
Jen, great to have you in studio.
Thank you. It was fun to hear all those accomplishments again. That was awesome.
What a season. It was unbelievable. How would you summarize in a word or two?
You know, it was just a special kind of magical season. Something that was in the making for quite some time. Obviously with an amazing group of seniors that kind of led the way both on and off the field. It's a once in a lifetime type career opportunity, so close to getting to the national championship game again, but just a fun experience for sure.
And it was a little different than 21's College Cup team. That mm-hmm. team had some carryovers of eligibility mm-hmm. from players who were frustrated the prior year, kind of mm-hmm. going out a little
yep.
early.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly you go to the College Cup, and that was amazing. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that could be topped. But
right.
somehow, especially the North Carolina game, which yep. we'll step into in a moment, this team did it. Like, mm-hmm. you play UCLA early-ish in the season at
yep.
home.
Mm-hmm.
You beat them, and that sort of said, like, okay, this team is right there
mm-hmm.
again.
Yeah, so in 2021, a lot of those girls were sophomores. And so they had the experience. And, you know, and then the year after that, we were still a top 25 team, but didn't kind of have the leadership factor. You know, we had some of the players, we had some experience. And, you know, it's amazing how important that leadership is. And the girls had that year to carry over to the senior year. We're talking about people like, you know, Jamie Shepard, Olivia Katoa, Savannah Empey. You know, those girls had that experience. And the leadership grew within that year. And then going into their senior year, we knew we had potentially a special group of players. We had the schedule to do it. We kind of had all of the pieces, and it's rare that you return a whole back line. It's rare that you return a whole midfield with that type of experience. So our expectations were very high. The girls expected to do well in the Big 12. They expected to get back to the national championship game. We fell just a little short, but certainly checked off all of those things they wanted to accomplish.
Regular season, let's talk about it. You play in the Big 12. You have a really successful regular season.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the tourney, you go to the title game, unfortunately fall short, but you still mm-hmm. get a one seed.
Right.
And you're set up with home games. Mm-hmm. What did it mean to have that kind of season to deserve home games in the NCAA tournament where you guys were awesome?
Yeah, well, this group kind of understood the importance of that non-conference schedule and how that leads into your seeding going into the tournament. So we had a schedule that was extremely competitive. And again, a lot of it has to go through South Field. We obviously play well at South Field. We have the support like none other in the whole country. And so I think going into that season, we knew the importance of the non-conference schedule on top of the new conference schedule that could give us that opportunity if we had success to be at home, which is something we had. In 2021, and kind of around the corner, we weren't a number one seed, but we ended up playing our games at home.
Had the right kind of teams,
yeah,
beat kinda, some other
yeah,
teams.
Yeah, it just kind of worked out. And so for us to have that number one seed, that's the huge home advantage. And you know, we made the most of it for sure.
We'll spend a moment now on the North Carolina game. I think this is one of the greatest games in BYU sports history. I'm a little biased. I was privileged to call it. The chips fell my way. 21, I called that Elite Eight game too. Yep. So I don't know if I'm the Elite Eight guy or what, but I feel lucky to be involved there.
We won't tell Greg that you're the lucky Elite Eight guy.
I didn't call 2012, which didn't result in a win, or 03.
Yeah, okay.
So we're 2-0 here.
I think you're good.
Okay, North Carolina. Yeah. You're down 3-0 after 20 or 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's snowing. Yes. You're at home. Yeah. Like, there's no way you win this game.
Right.
You come back and win it.
Yeah.
At what point did you feel like a comeback was possible in that game?
Well, I felt like the momentum really shifted probably about 30 minutes into the first half. Obviously, we were down 3-0. Didn't see that coming from a million miles away. The girls didn't see it coming. None of us were like, how did that just happen? But as we put in our bench, which had been a key to our success all year, and they put in their bench, which has been always a key to their program. And when you're up 3-0, you kind of, you think you have it, right? Especially in the first half. You could feel the momentum shift with our bench going in and turning the tide. We probably should have scored a goal in the first half. And I think it changed in the first half before we went into halftime. And we used that. And the girls, I think, felt that going into the second half is, hey, we could have already scored a goal. We're at home. We score goals. We average over 3 goals every game, no matter who we played this year. And it took that leadership and a couple of key players to really believe it could happen. And certainly we went out and set the tone from the beginning. The goals didn't come till later, but the tone was set from the very beginning of the second half to know that it could be possible.
Once you tie it, is it inevitable in your mind that you're going to take the lead in regulation?
Not for me. I thought, when the first and second one came, I'm like, okay, we can get this. And then we put the third one in. I thought, okay, we can do this in overtime because obviously the crowd was going crazy. The girls were playing with confidence. We had North Carolina really on their heels. They kind of didn't know what had hit them. And so I thought overtime was it. And then Liv Wade and Brecken kind of decided otherwise. And great that we didn't have to go into overtime.
Brecken essentially has an Olympico, meaning straight off a corner. I mean, it's an incredible goal. And then Olivia Wade-Katoa. After the game, I said, "Do you realize what you've done? Like, that's the greatest goal in BYU history."
Yeah.
She said, "I knew immediately. I got emotional. I put my hands on my head and my face, like, oh my gosh, we did this." And, months later, what are some of the memories and the emotions and the stories around that game and what that meant for your program? And it's a game you'll remember forever.
Oh yeah, for sure. It just you can't even really put into words what it was like to be on that field afterwards. To have the crowd on the field, everybody's hugging, everybody's in tears, lots of alumni, so many fans, really a special time. And the thing that, looking back on it now, is so many people were watching that game, right? It took place on Thanksgiving where families are together. And if you're a soccer fan, whether you're part of Cougar Nation or not, what we have found out that all college players and fans were watching that game. One, because it's North Carolina. Two, it was one of the only NCAA games left. And so coaches, players, young players, we made an impact. And it was definitely a statement for our program and the quality of our program and our players and what they're capable of. And I think we grew a lot of fans. Our fan base really grew after that game.
When you get to your second College Cup on your home field, it was a really special night. It was like a Hallmark movie with the snow coming down.
For sure, yeah. Snow glistening, you look up in the lights, and the snow, it snowed, I think, the whole game.
Yeah.
It didn't stick, which
amazingly
was great.
It was like warm enough.
Yes, but it did snow the whole game. And for us, fantastic. A great way for our seniors to kind of end their time on South Field and all of the time and journey that they all had individually to lead up into that moment was really special.
It was the women's soccer miracle ball.
It really was. Yeah,
absolutely. Special, special game. Mm-hmm. Okay, you turn the page now and you graduated a ton of seniors. 5 draft picks to the NWSL, which was a program record and amazing. Now you go into this next year. Unfortunately, in the spring, Ellie Walbrook tore ACL.
Yes.
But you got a lot of young, talented players for another season in the Big 12.
We do. I mean, it's not often that a coach or a program will graduate 11 seniors, of whom all were significant pieces of our success. And so that leaves a big void. We're fortunate that each year we bring in great players, every class. We have a lot of players that returned from their missions that redshirted last year. And so many of them are kind of ready for their time, right? They've kind of waited, they've trained, and now it's their time. So we have lots of pieces, lots of great players. We have an amazing freshman class coming in that we will rely on. And so we're looking forward to it. New faces that'll be on the field for our fans to learn and get to know, but really looking forward to it.
Well, it was spectacular and super memorable, and I'm excited to see Lynette Hernandez and Aaron Bailey and Allie Fryer and the gang.
Yep.
Get back out there this fall. It's going to be a lot of fun. Congrats on the great season, and thanks for coming in, Jen.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Jennifer Rockwood from Women's Soccer. Gymnastics also had a stellar year in year one in the Big 12, finished number 25 in the nation, went to the second day of NCAA Regionals, scored over 197 twice. It had been a couple years since BYU had done that. Five individual gymnasts qualified for regionals, and it was the first time scoring over 197 in three seasons. Nice job, gymnastics and Guard Young in that program. Coming up next, cross country and track are producing Olympians at BYU, national champions. Diljit Taylor and Ed Eystone discuss another banner year for their programs as our Big 12 roundtable continues. Welcome back to the BYUSN Big 12 Roundtable. I've said this is a running school for a long time. Cross country and track and field validated that again this season. And now joining us to talk about it are the head coaches of the respective programs, cross country, track and field, Diljit Taylor and Ed Eystone. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
We've never had
us.
Both of you at the same time.
Great to be here. Yeah, no.
We probably should have done an hour with just you two. We have
we
a few minutes.
Take the time.
Yeah, let's
do
it. You could.
We're both kind of shy, so having the two of us
yes,
here
you are.
On camera might be good.
Okay, you just wrapped up NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships and another successful situation for your programs. How was it in Eugene?
It was great. I feel like our athletes were prepared, and we had athletes from all event areas, which is always nice to have that representation. And I really feel like, you know, performing at the meets that matter the most is important, and we did that. So, yeah, it's a good weekend. We
Lots
got back this morning.
That's awesome. Lots of All-Americans.
Yes, and we had 16 entries overall, which is a pretty good year for us. Eight on the men's side, eight on the women's side, and we're coming back with, let's see, I think a half dozen All-Americans, first team All-Americans, not to mention the second teamers. And really, I think I was excited. Obviously, we usually get production from the distance side of things, but I was excited by the fact that our throwing group really stepped
up. How
about
the field part
of it? And our jumps as well. The field portion really stepped up. So hats off to Nick and to TIFF in terms of their preparation of their athletes.
Okay, this show is recapping and looking ahead and whatnot, the first year in the Big 12. The first Big 12 title is women's cross country.
Yeah.
What did it mean to win that one, be the first?
Well, it was kind of the motto going in, first year in, get the win, and I was really proud of those women and just something that we'll remember for a long time just to kind of get that checked off. And, yeah, it had good momentum going into indoor Big 12s and outdoor.
And then in men's cross country, you guys get on the podium, third place.
Yeah, we kind of took the consolation route at Big 12 because Oklahoma State beat us. They went on to win the national championship, and we finished third nationally. So I felt like our national meet was probably our best meet of the year to get third. And you always want to try to get on the podium, and we were happy about that.
Women take 14th, so cross country also successful like we talked about. Then we go to the indoor track season. Some people don't know. There's actually three seasons, cross country, indoor track, outdoor track. Indoor, highlighted by the national championship in the distance medley relay, or DMR, Sadie Sargent, Sammy Oblad, Carly Hansen, Riley Chamberlain. We had them in studio after they won it. That was big time to win the natty.
Yeah, that was huge. It wasn't expected. So it's always fun when you go in as kind of the underdog and just capture the title. So
that was
a great moment for our program.
Then James Corrigan, sophomore, wins the Big 12 steeplechase in outdoor.
I think he's our first Big 12 outdoor champion, so that was fun to see. And kind of stepped up, you know, Kenneth Rooks, we could still have him around, but he went professional, which we encouraged that. And it was fun to see James Corrigan step up, win the first Big 12 conference championship. And then he looked really good at the national meet. In the prelims, he won his heat, and then I think he was a little tired for the final. But we've got good things coming ahead for sure.
With that DMR team, you said, Diljit, we have had our share of lows. I told the women that just when the caterpillar thinks the world is ending, it turns into a butterfly. I think we just experienced a big butterfly moment. I really like that quote.
Yeah, it was after cross country nationals, kind of finding a way to keep those women motivated. That's what our team, we've embodied the butterfly as kind of our symbol, and we've had lots of butterfly moments since then.
How was the Big 12, Ed? Because you guys were kind of independent outdoor track, MPSF indoor, cross country, WCC, yeah. You're all over the place. Now you come into the Big 12. How was it?
Well, it's kind of a new philosophy because in the old days, we would use that weekend 2 weeks before the national meet as kind of a prep time, maybe a last chance qualifier. Now it's the conference championship. We got to be all in on that as well. So it's really exciting, and I think it's a way to bring the team together because having a team aspect, as we've seen in cross country over the years, really is something that unites all the event groups, all the event categories. And so we're pretty excited about having that in the future as well. And I think we did pretty well. Our theme was "We Ready" for the season, and I think we showed that we have been ready, and we prepared well, and we did well ultimately. The
grammar be darned. We ready, right? We're ready to go.
Because nothing says "We Ready" more than just a Caucasian dude like myself. We ready, right?
Okay, how was it for you guys in the Big
It was great. I think it's just another opportunity to experience a championship-type meet, and I feel like that prepared us really well for regionals and then just moving people on to the NCAA championships. By the time you get to that final meet, you've experienced so many championship moments that it just becomes just another meet. So it was really – we love it. Yeah. We love being in the Big 12.
That's great.
You guys, there are several programs at BYU that are ready for this. You were like, we're ready for the next step. I felt like you guys were like, okay, now we really get to show the country, which you were already, but now we get to elevate it, which was awesome. Most teams are like, okay, NCAAs are over. Let's do some sports camps. Let's take it easy. You guys have Olympic trials where you're coaching athletes who are at BYU, some that have graduated and into the Olympics. We'll get into that in a minute. But, Diljit, the U.S. Olympic trials are a big deal.
Yeah, huge deal, and you're seeing more and more BYU representation, which is just kind of a nod to just these kids and how they've elevated themselves in our program. And we'll have a lot in BYU uniform, and then Ed and I both respectively coach some pros that are also here training, and so he's already got two tickets punched with the marathoners, but we'll hope to get a couple more punched.
Let's talk about those guys. Just Connor Mance, Clayton Young, Rory Linklater with Canada as well, we acknowledge.
Rory's in town.
Is he
he's
really?
He's training with the guys right now for the next two or
That's
three
awesome.
Weeks.
That's awesome. How proud are you to have those guys in the event where you made the Olympics?
Well, it's pretty cool. And the fact of the matter is they were on that 2019 team where we had six guys make it to the national meet in one event in the 10,000 meters. And three of those six guys have now gone on to make Olympic glory. So it's really cool. And I just love the way that they are all in. They're focused. They're going to try to do the very best they can. They're doing some hard work right now. And as Coach Taylor said, we are going to try to get as many additional athletes on that Olympic team to join them.
There's others that could, which is awesome. We ready, and we're going to be butterflies.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, we ready.
I love it. Like your runners, that was fast. That was the interview. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. Okay, a couple of teams that also had good seasons with BYU in the Big 12. Let's talk about some golf. Men's golf, 11 team top 10 finishes. How about Cooper Jones as a freshman coming in and winning the Bridgestone Collegiate Invitational? His brother Zach won the Arizona Intercollegiate, tied for 9th at NCAA Regionals, 6th at the Austin Regional. Lost a playoff that would have sent them to the next round. They were that close. Another great year for men's golf. Women's golf, 5 team top 10 finishes, 3 individual top 10 finishes. How about Berling Wong winning the Utah Golf Association 2024 Winter Champs, and Lila Naliai 4th place at the Maryland Smith Sunflower Invitational. After the break, we put a bow on the 2024 Big 12 Roundtable.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to our BYU Sports Nation Big 12 Roundtable. I'm Jerem Jordan. What a season for BYU in the Big 12. Let's take a look at some of the teams we haven't mentioned quite yet. How about women's tennis going to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2007? Tougher competition, they rose to the occasion. 17 wins, most since 07. 4 over ranked teams. 3 Cougars made the all-Big 12 second team, Bobo Huang representing. Men's tennis. Zach Warren's first year as head coach, Wally Thane. Zach Fuchs, Big 12 number one, doubles position co-champions, 11-3 in non-conference, 6 of the 7 Big 12 matches against top 30 teams. Tough competition in the Big 12 in men's tennis. How about women's swim and dive, 5th of the Big 12 championships, 8 all-Big 12 honors. Sherry Scabelin retires after 37 years, and Tamber McAllister named the new swimming and diving head coach. Men's swim and dive, 3rd at the Big 12 championships. Jordan Tiffany and Prolo, individual Big 12 championships. They were fantastic. 8 entries at the NCAA championships, 35th at the NCAA Championships. What a season for all the Big 12 teams. I cannot wait for season number 2 in Provo of BYU in the Big 12. Congrats to all the Cougar teams this season, who, as we've chronicled, had tremendous success as the Cougars transitioned into the Big 12. That wraps up today's roundtable. Sorry to Dennis Pitta, we ran out of time. You didn't play in the Big 12. Thanks to Austin Colley, David Nixon, Jonathan Tavernari, Jennifer Rockwood, Diljeet Taylor, and Ed Eystone. I'm Jerem Jordan. What's going to happen in year 2 in Provo? Football, get to a bowl game, men's hoops with Kevin Young, women's hoops, and much, much more. We'll have it all for you on BYU Sports Nation. Thanks for joining us on this Big 12 Roundtable special. Go Cougs!